This life is as impermanent as a water bubble. Remember how quickly it decays and death comes. After death, just like a shadow follows the body, the results of black and white karma follow. Finding firm and definite convictions in this, please bless me always to be careful, to abandon even the slightest of negativities, and accomplish all virtuous deeds. Seeking samsaric pleasures is the door to all suffering. They are uncertain and cannot be relied upon. Recognizing these shortcomings, please bless me to generate the strong wish for the bliss of liberation.
This is a snippet of what you would hear at the beginning of a practice session with Tibetan Buddhist Center Jompa Lingpo Ling. This chant is an excerpt from The Foundation of All Good Qualities, which is a traditional Gelug chant. Jompa Lingpo Ling, translated in English as Essence of Wisdom, was formed in 2012 by Tibetan monk Geshe Nawang, referred to as Geshe La by his students. We spoke with two members of the center, Sue and Shauna, and the teacher, Geshe La, about how Buddhist practice and philosophy have shaped their lives. But how did Jompa Lingpo Ling start? Here we have Sue, who has been with the group for 10 years and remembers when Geshe La first came to teach.
The simplest answer is that it was kind of by inertia. We started out working with another teacher, Ken Rinpoche, and who would come here from India like once a year. Yeah, they approached us because he was living up in Vermont, Geshe Nawang, and had been sponsored by TLI, you know, Institute up there. And since there's a large Tibetan community here in the Amherst area, they wanted to formally sponsor teachings with him down in this area. And so, so we started meeting and, you know, some of us from the Ken Rinpoche group and some of the Tibetans and, you know, and meeting, Geshe La and, you know, we really clicked with him and he knew Ken Rinpoche also. So, you know, and they were the same lineage. So, yeah. And then it just sort of snowballed. I mean, in a good way. But all of us in the group, we immediately really felt a very strong connection to Geshe Nawang. It feels like a really good fit. I really respect him as a teacher and feel that he is very committed to what he does and that he really deeply cares about the Sangha and cares about everyone's progress. I mean, that really comes through his heart. I mean, and I don't know what the two of you felt when you attended class, but for me, that's, you know, I would say that that is what keeps me coming is the heart there, even more than the whatever he happens to be teaching, you know.
Without Geshe La, I would have never had the fortitude to attack the Lamrim Chenmo, nor the interest to really attack it. Because this is an 800-page text. Very small writing. But he's able to make it all come alive, to breathe into it, much like Jay does in class, I'm sure. You know, a teacher is so important. So, so important. Stumbling around by yourself is... You could spend the rest of your life just stumbling around. If you don't have some kind of focal beam that you're following, you're never going to really get anywhere.
Yeah,
that's what I found. And there's all kinds of things that are amusing and entertaining. And, oh, I want to know about this. And I want to know about that. And I want to know about this. And next thing you know, your life is all wasted up. And you've never gotten a good practice.
That was Shauna speaking. Shauna is the chanting master in Jompa Lingpo Ling. She is a longtime student of Geshe La and has found her passion and direction through her studies with him and her own independent practice. We sat down with her and wanted to know more about her path.
Okay, so that practice and all the Dharma study that you do, like, how does it help you stay on the path to alleviating your suffering or maybe find that path?
If I didn't, my memory would get bad and I'd forget what I'm doing and where I'm going.
Okay, yeah.
I tend to find, when I'm really in tune, as I'm walking along down the road, I'm doing a chant in my head. it's writing on my lips.
How has your practice changed and evolved over the time you've been engaging with it?
Well, it's changed in that I only had those first 3 years with Rigs and Dorje. But in the meantime, I ran into some people who are Gaelic practitioners. And Gaelic, as you probably know, is more of an academic lineage that teaches from the base preliminaries all through the Mahayana levels, and then kind of stops. And I really wanted to know those underpinnings because I didn't really have the underpinnings. So I started studying with Geshe La back in 2014 and absorbed as much as I could, as quick as I could. And see, I used to be a graduate student too, so I'm a high powered learner. So I was able to attack the subject. But so having a teacher that could teach me the Mahayana allowed me to study that, realized that that was the path I needed to focus on to be able to help others. Because Dzogchen is higher training. And the idea of me being to the point where I can lead people to some kind of illumination from that is just preposterous. But I can help a lot of people get started. And I have a master's in education, so that makes me a good candidate for being a teacher. And I had nothing better to do with my life than this, and that's for absolute sure. It's the best thing I could possibly do with my life, between that and sponsoring women in AA. And so that's what I do. I live on Social Security. I don't work. I live very parsimoniously, and I help others. I practice and pray.
Okay, this is a really vague question, so feel free to take it in any direction, but we want to know why you think it's important to study Buddhism.
You no longer fear death.
Mm.
That's a biggie. I mean, a lot of society's motivation is all driven by this angst about death. And in Buddhism, we embrace it. It's the opposite end of living. So it's okay. It's two equals part of make a whole. And it's just, you know, impermanence is the nature of everything anyway. And, you know, so many humans don't realize that. And they think things are concrete, and they grasp, and they hold on, and they squeeze with all their might, while things are changing all around them. And they never realize impermanence is everywhere.
So the importance of it is to teach people that and to help them, like, let go?
Yes. And that's what I do, not only actually with students from the group, but within AA, with women I sponsor. That's the same kind of thing. It's the same path.
So I guess I'm wondering, like, what specifically you do to help people with that letting go of the fear of death, like, besides the zoomed out, like, you know, groundlessness and impermanence kind of teachings?
Mostly from the absorptions I've gotten through Tulku Thando and his Art of Death and Dying. About how I'm gotten fairly good at explaining impermanence quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure really how to answer that fully. Help people be less afraid. Help people know everything's a change.
Obviously, we've been looking a lot into the Four Noble Truths and using that as like a way to structure some of our learning. So we're wondering what the universal suffering that's talked about and like just general primal confusion looks like to you in your world and in your life.
Universal suffering?
Yeah.
And the fact that people don't understand impermanence. The lack of understanding of impermanence is the number one thing. Because people struggle if they think their things are concrete, that they're real, they can grasp onto them and they can attain them and they can own them and they'll have a possession and then there'll be something. And things just come and go and slip right by. You know, life is like a river and people don't realize that they're, you know, floating in the stream.
Geshe is one of the highest degrees earned by Buddhist monks after 18 years of study at a monastery. When we talked to Geshe La, he emphasized the importance of understanding the impermanent and empty nature of our reality.
Without ignorance, you know everything's reality. Then we have no more mistake, no more angers, no more ego. When you see reality, then becoming is you have more compassion mind and more practice of patience, more love, practice of love. So automatically comes because you see reality. Then this brings to all that kind of practices is very control strong. You have automatic come like that.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have practice of love and patience, then your minds always be stay peaceful and very calm because no disturbed mind.
Geshe-la talks about how he practices and meditates on these concepts. He mentions something called analytical meditation, a practice focused on analyzing strong emotional responses in order to understand their sources. An example he uses is when a negative emotion arises, like anger. He tries to understand what caused it and how to view the cause in a more positive way. Sue does a similar practice of transitioning negative feelings into positive ones using analytical and meta meditation. Many members of the group, including Sue, express how they lean on this meditation in times of political distress.
I use these practices where you take maybe someone who you just feel, oh, I can't stand this person. I really hate this person. And, you know, and then I spend a couple weeks doing my meditations, imagining how this person, you know, started out as a tiny baby. And his mother adored him and did everything for him. And all he wants is to be happy, you know, and seeing that I could do those meditations and come to the point where I felt like I didn't hate this person anymore. So I could see applications in my everyday life. It really helped me. It gave me ways to see people with whom maybe I was in conflict with differently in a positive way that allowed, you know, resentment or anger or whatever to fall away. So that, I mean, tremendously motivating in terms of the, which I would not have gotten if I had just been reading those texts, you know, that explain the steps, right? It really took me, it took sitting down and doing it days and weeks and months at a time to say, oh yeah, look what this practice can do for my life, you know, and I'm calmer.
Do you think it's easier to practice Buddhism in day-to-day society as opposed to in a monastery?
No. Monastery is easy peasy because it's all around you anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no friction, no hassle with a monastery. It's the outside world. Samsara barking at your heels is difficult to deal with, mm-hmm. which is good because every time you see a difficulty, you see something like I can work on.
Mm-hmm.
I can get rid of that difficulty. I can purify myself some more.
I always think that it must be like very difficult to really stay intact with the idea of groundlessness and whatnot when the world, like when America, the world we live in, is based so much in like objectivity and consumerism and stuff
like
that. Yeah.
So absolutely.
It's very interesting to me to see people who are able to maintain like the clearest mindset possible. How would you recommend someone get into practice?
Mm.
Start at the beginning. Start with a Hiyana. Learn patience, learn the paramitas, and then go forward into the Mahayana. You really want to have that foundational stuff of the Hiyana solid in your heart before you go further. And the same thing is true with meditation. You want to get the single point concentration, shamatha, down really solid before you try doing vipassana, I look at it like kind of when you do Vipassana, you're sitting out in your canoe in the middle of the lake, you know, and you're looking up at the stars, and your canoe is shamatha. If it's got holes in it, you're not going to be able to concentrate on the stars. So fix your canoe first.
Mm-hmm.
How there is a way out. There is a path. It is available to everyone. Away from all the suffering, away from all the anxiety about existence. There's a path away from all that that works. It's worked for thousands of years. And all you have to do is look into it and find it.
What the Dalai Lama has said, you know, people ask him, you know, about religion, about Buddhism, and he says, my religion is kindness. And he has this phrase, he said, well, it's too crazy. He said, be kind whenever possible. It is always possible. And that is my guiding, those are my guiding words for my whole life. That is what it really comes down to for me. And so how can I use the Buddhist teachings to help me be able to do that? You know, so like all these strategies, all these practices, what it comes down to is they help me do a better job of that, of being kind to people in every moment, you know, striving to do that. I don't succeed, but that's my goal, you know, and I have that up on my fridge. So that then I don't have to talk about, oh, I'm a Buddhist or I'm a Christian or I do this and that. It's like, okay, this is my religion. Be kind whenever possible. It is always possible.
Well, we can't do better than the Dalai Lama. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks to Jumpon Lingpo Ling, Sue, Shauna, Geshe-la, and Translator Dolkar. And a special thanks to our professor, Jay Garfield, and the members of our Buddhist philosophy class. I'm Devin Fisher.
And I'm Francesca Binder.
We hope you've enjoyed our podcast.